everyone, really quickly before we get into the stories, this very first story that you're going to listen to, it's short, but it's really good. Regardless, after the first story, there will be a picture to go along with it and a short video that she posted along with the story onto Reddit. So, Melissa, thank you again for allowing me to use your story for this. And I definitely wanted to include the picture and the video. So, oh, and obviously, if you're listening to this in podcast form, you're not going to see the picture and you're not going to see the video. But I will leave the description to both of them in the description. I will leave the link of the picture and the video in the description of this episode. Nailed it. All right, I'm going to shut up now.
Let's get into the video.
Okay, so this happened to me earlier, and I definitely don't think I'll be sleeping tonight. I'm currently staying in a remote part of the United Kingdom and having a break from working, which means more time to pursue my hobbies, one of them being photography. I had scoped out this creepy-looking tree formation in a nearby forest, set my camera and tripod up as the sun was coming down, you know, for that extra creepy vibe. As I'm happily taking photos, I see a woman pass the entrance to the arched trees. This woman had parked her car next to mine when I arrived. She passed me a couple of times, looking at me for prolonged periods each time that she did pass. I assume she wants to come up this path but sees I'm taking photos and decides to walk elsewhere. I'd say 5 minutes goes by. She appears again. This time, she's walking toward me, dragging her left side slightly with this strange limp. She stops once, stares at me for a few seconds, then begins walking toward me again. I ask her if she's okay, and I'm starting to put my camera away at this point, readying my tripod to use for any type of self-defense if necessary, because the vibe that I'm getting is way off. She just starts grunting at me, then stops and stares again. It's at this point that this woman is close enough for me to realize she's actually a man in woman's clothing with a wig on. An uncomfortable moment passes. She starts grunting again, walks towards the edge of the path, grabs a pile of leaves, and starts throwing them around, grunts some more, and then walks off aimlessly into the forest. I call my friend to tell her what's going on and ask that she stay on the phone with me just in case this person comes back. I'm going to take a couple of more pictures and then I'm out. For a good 10 minutes, I hear crunching of leaves circling me in the forest. I convince myself it's just the wildlife. Then, nothing but silence. I take more photos. I haven't seen or heard the person around for 15 minutes now, so I assume I'm safe. I leave the path and see that the car is now gone. Thank fuck. However, I quickly notice that there's a man walking toward me from the entrance. It's that same fucking guy. He's now changed into men's attire as he walks past me and shoots me this grin, that sends shivers down my spine. I don't scare easily, but this guy just gave off all the wrong signals, causing this overwhelming feeling of dread to completely wash over me. I'm still on the phone at this point, holding my tripod over my shoulder just in case. I quickened my pace and got back to my car. As I did so, I saw him come out of the lane that I'd just been down, stop and look around, then start walking towards my car with intent. This part is all on video. I video for a while, then haul the fuck out of there, driving past his car that he just moved down the road, thinking, what in the gray beard fuck just happened? Limping, leaf-throwing forest stalker. I hope I never see you again. As a young man, I enlisted in a branch of the military that will go unnamed. I was stationed in a place that will also remain unnamed. This is to protect my identity and nothing more. Other than that, I'm a big fan of this channel. I was told I should submit my story. In the early 2000s, I was enlisted and stationed somewhere in the domestic US. This was the first time many of us had lived away from home, so we had to find coping methods that fit other lifestyles. Some exercise, some play video games, and a whole bunch of us just made bad decisions. Drinking too much, getting secret tattoos, fighting, buying cars we couldn't afford, sleeping with anything that moved. You get the picture. We didn't understand anything about life yet, but still, we thought we had it made. We'd never have to worry about anything because the government had our backs. We were indestructible. I cannot express to you how common and how incorrect this thinking is. There's a reason the military upholds their own police force. You can't just piss off and expect there to be zero consequences. If anything, the consequences are actually worse. Me and the crowd that I chose to run with all elected the party scene over anything else. It started as small poker games on one bunk room or another, until finally branching out to someone who had a whole modular house on base. This had more rooms, so we sent more invites out. The poker games turned into music, lounging, drinking lots of whiskey and beer. And before too long, we were taking trips off base to a couple of local bars in the area. It was risky, but it could be done with the proper forethought and preparation. This became a very important ritual to me. I liked drinking. I liked doing stuff on the edge and riding the line of what was acceptable and what wasn't. It's a trait that's definitely gotten me into a lot of trouble my entire life. As time went on, we had some experiences that I would consider close to being caught, usually just almost getting busted at the gate upon return, where we were all hammered but pretending not to be. We also got pulled over once, and by the good grace of our uniforms, the cops let us roll back to base without so much as a warning. It wasn't enough to keep me away, though, so the little group would venture off base and would no longer be a rotation. Only three or four of us were desperate enough to keep risking it. Also, we were hooked on the bars. There were actual women in there, not just base hussies. There were pool tables, beer taps, real gambling, sports games. I mean, honestly, I'm describing any average bar, but to kids in the military, it was goddamn freedom. But 1 week was just about the worst week of my life, and not really for any particular reason, just small things snowballing and building my agitation. I got some bad news from home. I wasn't performing well on base, and my drinking habit was starting to materialize in my habits and home area. I was just a lazy drunk, and was starting to get shit for it. But because of the nature of my drinking and military life, this anger festered into something it didn't need to be, and I wanted to blow off some steam in a bad way. By the end of that week, I think everyone knew to steer clear of me, because no one wanted to ride along to the bar by Friday night. Everyone chose to stay on base and just to hang out in the barracks or at someone's house. I wanted more. I cruised down to this rundown watering hole, where the hillbillies would absolutely get plastered. It had that kind of high energy that I was looking to lose myself in that night. When I first got there, I walked in a hero. People cheered, waved, and this was the usual reaction to the uniform. It was small town celebrity stuff, and I soaked up every bit of it. I took a stool at the bar and ordered a beer and a shot, and let my evening begin. Everything was friendly for the first couple of hours, wherein we took turns buying songs on the jukebox, slamming shots, and draining beers. I was tanked within 90 minutes, but it was only 10:30, and I figured I'd be closing the place down. There was a lot more drinking to be done. By 11 p.m., things were starting to take a bit of a turn. I pissed the bartender off, plus he was already noticing how drunk I was, so the drinks were coming my way less and less. This set me on a tirade where I just started blasting the guy with all kinds of insults, which turned half the bar in my direction, and turned the praises into backhanded comments for me to shut my mouth. I obliged, at least at first, even offered an apology. Anything to get back on the drinking side of things. Within a half an hour, they were serving me a beer again, and I had a brand new shit-eating grin on my face. I distinctly remember looking around and thinking, where can I find the most trouble? I was surprised to find it right next to me. A cute little blonde had snuck up beside me to order from the bartender. I looked her up and down and immediately started hitting on her. She entertained me in a polite way, but wasn't hitting back in the way I wanted. I pressed harder and got loud. Then did the douchiest thing ever. I put my hand on her hip. She pushed me off and threw a drink in my face. and told me exactly what I should do with myself. I didn't take this well. Kind of started to walk after her, but the guys around me yanked me back and struck me on the bar stool. They patted me on the back, said encouraging things like, better luck next time, just to kind of pacify me, I think. Either way, the rest of the night in the bar is pretty much a blur to me. I know I was there for at least another half an hour, nursing my head and still drinking beers. I don't remember talking to anyone, doing anything. Just a total blank. What I can remember next is exiting the bar and stepping out into the darkest shade of night that I've ever seen. I'm talking total darkness. The parking lot was a long, curved dirt lane. My car was halfway down it. I remember the cool air, the familiar drunken stagger, one stiff leg in front of the other, looking up into the night sky with drool and spit along my cheek. Then I remember a hand coming down on my shoulder to spin me around. "Hey, army man," a gruff voice said to me. I didn't even get to speak. Whoever was standing in front of me cold clocked me so hard that I saw stars, and I'm not talking about the ones above me. The nerves in my brain went haywire, and I was briefly in another dimension entirely. When I hit the dirt and racked my head against the ground was when I came back to the parking lot and vaguely remembered what was going on. I tried to crawl away, but my motor skills were shot. Looking back, I drank something like 10 beers, a couple of cocktails, and just as many shots. This was Hickville, USA, but they were happy to sell booze to just about anyone. "You touch girls a lot?" a different voice asked me. Someone started kicking me from behind, right in the spine. I instinctually covered up my head, but it did little good to protect my back. It was knocking the wind out of me and making me see stars at the same time. "Come on, let the man answer," the other voice said. "Go on, tell us. Do you touch girls often?"
"No,"
I coughed. "I'm sorry." "Hear that, Lynn? He's sorry." "Oh, is that right? Well, shoot, I guess we're right as rain," the guy that kicked me said. I slowly uncovered my head, drunkenly looked up to see two figures towering above me, although one was much bigger than the other. He looked like a damn gorilla to me as I laid there, just this big hulking mass. "Peekaboo," he said, then clobbered me right in the nose. It smashed into my face and shattered, and let a warm wave of blood cascade down my chin. The guy behind me smacked me in the ear, then booted me in the other, and again things got hazy for a bit. I'd been in a few tussles in my life, but nothing like this. I remember it occurring to me as I swam through the fog of subconscious that I possibly could die in that moment. Then another ring of my bell brought me back into the parking lot. There was a sound in my head that made my brain feel small, just like a droning feedback that seemed to bounce between my ears. There were voices talking beyond that ringing sound, but I couldn't even make out what they were saying. I laid there and actually thought they were coming from the TV in another room. It wasn't until I felt the wind and dirt beneath my hands that I remembered that I was outside. "Never come back. You understand me?" one of the voices said. "Comprende?" the other one said. I nodded and said yes. Anything to get me out of there. "We went easy on you. These guys wanted to bury you in the mountain, but we told them we'd take care of it. So, again, we won't see you anymore, correct?" "Never," was all I could say. "I'm sorry." "Yeah, we know," came the response. "Now go harass your own women, pig." I tried to get to my feet, but they just threw me back to the ground and told me to crawl. I did as instructed, doing my best not to pass out or even cry. I didn't even know where I was going. I just kept nosing my way through the dirt. Anytime I got off course, one of the hicks would give me a boot in the direction that I needed to go. Before long, I crawled until my head hit the side of the car. "There you go, shitheel. Don't ever look back," was all they said. And I heard them walk off into the night, but I never heard a truck start. They walked until I couldn't hear them, drifting through the trees, I'm assuming toward their houses out in the woods. That was even scarier to me, like these guys were true backwoods rednecks, and I just barely escaped a hillbilly execution. I laid there for a minute, more like 20 or 30, let my vision correct itself. I was desperate for water, but there was no way I was going back into that bar. I eventually got behind the wheel and buckled in, made the looping drive back towards base. I stopped at one of the few 24-hour gas stations, got a bottle of water, cleaned up my face the best I could in the bathroom. I needed to look mildly presentable if I was going to get back on base. It worked, but by morning there were officers coming to ask me questions. The gate guards reported me not long after I drove to the checkpoint, as I was obviously drunk and didn't control the car well as I drove off. They found I had a broken nose, a severe hangover, and even a cracked tooth. I won't go into the consequences of that night, but I was stripped of rank and demoted as it were, and then put on dog shit duties for 3 months, cleaning bathrooms and manual labor, anything they could find for me. It was a hugely humbling experience, and one that I was in desperate need of. I was on a hot streak of bad decisions, and making those guys beating me up was the wake-up call that I needed. The discipline received from my superiors was just the icing on the cake, the structure and direction that I needed to succeed. I became much more aware of my actions after that whole experience. And also, it was the most terrifying thing in my life. I developed some PTSD after getting beat up and had regular nightmares for quite some time. I'd get random paranoia and insomnia too. I was at the total mercy of those strangers, and they knew it, planned on it. It wouldn't surprise me if those guys have bodies on their records. I count myself lucky to not be one of them. I figured the only thing that saved my skin was the military uniform that I was wearing that night. Life lesson definitely learned. My friends and I have a podcast where we all tell each other scary stories. This is the one that's infamous in my family. I grew up hearing and telling over and over. Back in the 80s, my Aunt Kay was in her early 20s. This was before she married my uncle, and she would drive these long distances back and forth between her parents and my uncles to visit. It was a transitional period for them. He had just graduated, and she hadn't moved out yet to be with him. It was a long drive across several states, through the desert, which took her several hours. This desolate highway would have stretches of the road that lasted hundreds of miles, where you quite often wouldn't see another driver, let alone a gas station. So Aunt Kay set out and began one of these journeys. A couple of hours into that drive, Aunt Kay noticed a dark vehicle slowly catching up to her. She barely noticed as she sung along to the radio, until the vehicle got aggressively close. She turned off the music and looked into her rearview mirror, seeing the vehicle flash its brights and a hand pointing at her car, motioning for her to pull over. Alarmed, she quickly slowed, began to look for a safe place to pull off the road, to see what must be wrong with her car. The second that she pulled off of the road, she said she felt and heard as clear as day, "Don't pull over." Then again, stronger this time, "Don't pull over." Call it God, intuition, or maybe just a gut feeling, but a jolt of adrenaline and fear shot through Aunt Kay's body as she hit the gas and peeled back out onto the highway. Heart still pumping, Aunt Kay silently asked herself what the hell was that about, as she saw the vehicle peel out behind her. The dark vehicle continued to closely follow, flashing their brights and still motioning for her to pull over. Fear and confusion set in as Aunt Kay began to question what was really going on. Why was this driver so incessant on her pulling over? Was there really something wrong with her car? And what the hell was that warning that she felt? It would have been a very serious and severe situation if her car would have happened to break down out there. This was all before cell phones, but she continued to press on. Just as her resolve began to waver, she started questioning if she truly did feel what she felt back there. She started slowing back down when that same dark vehicle picked up speed. It entered the oncoming traffic lane and came level with my aunt's car. The driver smiled, pointed, then motioned and mouthed the words "pull over" to my aunt. She said the second that she looked into his eyes, she felt pure evil. She felt a horribly sick feeling in the pit of her stomach, and again heard those words in her head, "Do not pull over." She described him as scary looking, greasy, and noticed that he was missing a couple of teeth in his smile. A smile she'll never forget. That sent chills throughout her, and this quickly dispelled any thoughts she had of pulling over and put the pedal to the metal to try and lose this man. He chased after her. She slowed down, he would slow down. She sped up, he sped up. It got to the point that he began to try to push her car off the road. Aunt Kay was to the point of tears, and this creep continued to terrorize her, all alone, out in the middle of nowhere. Finally, after what felt like an eternity, Aunt Kay sees a couple of semis off in the distance. She felt as if she could only get close enough and maybe get between those trucks. Maybe she'd be safe. He continued to flash his lights, honk his horn, trying to hit her car, until she got close enough to those trucks. As she got between them, she saw the dark vehicle slow way down and eventually disappear from view. She stayed with those trucks for a couple of hours, till she felt safe enough to pull over at a gas station, and it all hit her, and she cried. Fast forward several years, my aunt and uncle are now married. He's working at a law firm as a high-profile criminal prosecutor in Las Vegas. She's now a full-time mom of several young children. Since I've known my aunt, she's been obsessed with true crime. Dateline, 2020, unsolved mysteries, it's all playing in her house all the time. This day was no different. She was folding laundry in the kitchen while listening to the TV in the other room. The interviewer was talking about a man who was being interviewed on death row. As she paired another match of socks, she heard the man describe one of his tactics for procuring victims. According to him, he would wait along the side of a highway. A car would go by with a family, and he'd wait. Another car with a male driver would go by. He'd wait. But every so often, a car would go by with a pretty woman driving alone. So I'd pull out behind them and follow them. I'd flash my brights, honk, and motion for them to pull over. Aunt Kay was now paralyzed as she continued to listen. When they would eventually pull over, I'd tell them to pop the hood. I'd be able to tell them what was wrong with their car. They would, and I'd yank a couple of wires. When the car wouldn't start, I'd tell them no problem. My buddy has a shop in the next town. I can give you a ride and he'll give you a fair deal. My aunt slowly moved to the living room. They'd get in. I'd rape and kill them, bury them anywhere out in the desert. When asked how many times he did this, he responded, "They'll never find all the bodies. I can't even count." And how many got away? 2, maybe 3. My aunt stood alone, staring into the same toothless grin that she saw on the highway that day. It was Henry Lee Lucas. Hello, everyone. I'm a longtime listener and a first-time submitter. I've got a story that I think you'll find interesting. It's about my time working the graveyard shift at a 24-hour gas station. I'm honestly surprised there aren't more stories submitted by folks that have worked this shift. Every one of my coworkers, or even just random people that I've swapped stories with, they all have seen or directly experienced some seriously bizarre stuff, every single one of them. So as a shout out to other fellow veterans of the convenience store third shift, I want to hear your crazy and unbelievable experiences as well. I was fresh out of college when I got to the gig. Jobs were pretty scarce. When I saw the help wanted sign in the window at one of the local gas stations, I didn't hesitate. I didn't even know what the pay was. At the time, minimum wage was probably around $7.25, something like that. It didn't matter though. I needed the money coming in, or I was going to lose my apartment and pretty much everything else that I had in my life. I was driving around without car insurance at the time because I was that broke. I got hired pretty much on the spot and started that weekend. The job was simple enough. Keep the place clean, stock the shelves, ring up purchases, everything that you see clerks doing. Sometimes there were pretty obvious boring spells. I'd go outside and take out the trash, reline them, and even sweep up the parking lot. Anything to keep busy as everything is on camera inside that convenience store. It's pretty low energy, easy enough to get through. The hours were brutal. From 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., I was the only employee in the store. Sometimes there would be another coworker for a couple of hours, especially if it was a busy night or if inventory desperately needed to be done. This little reprieve was rare, but always welcome, as the only other company were the customers, and you never knew what you were going to get. The gas station was located on the outskirts of town, We got all sorts of characters coming and going. There were the truckers, bleary-eyed and haggard, looking for a hot cup of coffee and a pack of smokes. There were the late-night partiers, their laughter echoing throughout the store as they stocked up on snacks. And then there were the others, the ones who made your skin crawl, the ones who looked like they were running from something, or maybe to something. They were typical junkies, tweakers, homeless people of various shades. Sometimes really strung-out people would come in, clearly agitated and just looking for trouble. I'd ask them to leave immediately or I'd call the police. 9 times out of 10, this would work. They would take their crazy drug-fueled trauma back outside where it belonged. Every now and again, though, you'd have someone slip in and go to the bathroom, only to never come out. And I can't tell you how many burnouts I would have getting blasted in the bathroom, only to nod off or keep using and completely lose track of time. My only option for these folks was to knock until they opened up again. I have to tell them I'm calling the police, as I have to assume they've OD'd in there. This is a real-life thing that happens. It's why sometimes you'll find blue lights in bathrooms, so some people can't find a vein. It's a sad fact of reality nowadays. The nights were long, and they oscillated between mind-numbing boredom and spikes of anxiety. I remember one night, though, a man came in, his eyes darting around nervously. He was twitchy and kept one hand in a pocket out of his hoodie the entire time. I rang up his purchases, my heart pounding in my chest, but I was relieved when he left without incident, at least until he came back. He slipped through the door about 40 minutes later, perused the exact same aisles that he had before. This time he looked even more nervous. I mean, really bugging out. I suspect he had a plan earlier, but wasn't quite high enough to go through with it. So he went and got jacked up, and now he was back. "Hey man, you already bought all that stuff," I said to him. "You don't look good either. I'm about to hit the call button. The cops will be here in 3 minutes. It was a stone-cold bluff, probably more like 10 or more, but this clown didn't know that. I watched as his eyes peeled wide and he started stepping towards the door. "Wasn't gonna do nothing," he explained. I could smell the alcohol wafting off of him now. Earlier, he just smelled bad, like B.O. I made a motion towards the button underneath the counter, and the guy bolted towards the door. It was a bit of a confidence booster, honestly. And work was more or less stressful after that night. I would just start checking some of these folks at the door, especially if I could tell they weren't going to buy anything. I know it sounds weird, but sometimes with these people, it's very, very obvious. But the night that really stands out, the night that still gives me nightmares to this day, was the night of the robbery. It was around 3 a.m. I was restocking the cooler when I heard the bell above the door jingle. I turned and saw a pretty average dude coming in. I said hello and went back to restocking. I was almost done and wanted to finish the cooler before I went back to the register. "Hey, over here," the guy said. I turned around to see he was now wearing a ski mask and pointing a gun in my direction. What looked like a beanie on his head was really a mask he'd rolled down his face, and the gun, I'm assuming, came out of the pocket of his sweater. When he said, "Hey, over here," I thought he was talking to someone else, like maybe waving another robber into the store. I awkwardly looked at the door and waited for someone to come in. He looked at me, looked at the door, and then waved the gun again. "Let's go, get behind the counter," he said. I froze, my mind racing. I remembered the advice my manager had given to me. If you ever get robbed, just give them what they want. Don't be a hero. So that's what I did. I did my best to calmly walk over to the register, punch in the keys that would open up the till for me. Inside, I was going bananas, unsure of every movement. I never had a gun pointed at me, and it feels like they're going to pull the trigger every second that goes by. You keep thinking, "Now, now, now, here it comes, now." Just a couple of pounds of pressure and you're dead on the floor. It rang open. I gave him the money for the register, my hands shaking the entire time. Sweat started pouring out of the usual places, mostly my face and armpits though. It felt like it was 110 degrees in there, and I had just been shoulder deep in a 40 degree soda cooler. I set all the cash on the counter between me and that guy, and that's when I noticed the gun was shaking a little bit. This man was clearly panicked. His voice was shaky as he demanded the money. and I could see sweat glistening on the skin around his eyes beneath the ski mask. He kept glancing towards the door, as if expecting the police to burst in at any moment. "I said, give me the money!" he shouted, his voice echoing throughout the empty store. I could hear the fear in his voice now, and it made me feel strangely detached from the situation. It was as if he was watching a movie, and any moment now, the credits would roll. I gestured to the small pile of cash on the counter between us. He looked down at it, looked at me, and then looked back towards the door. He took another peek into the empty register. Everything started to come together for him. The gun started to lower, just as he reached his free hand out and put it on the cash. But then, something unexpected happened. A car pulled into the gas station. Its headlights cut right through the front window. They were parked right outside the front door. It would be coming in at any second. This immediately spooked the guy, who jammed the gun in his pocket and bolted out the door without taking the money. Seizing my chance, I ducked behind the counter and hit the panic button, alerting the police. Now I got to see what the actual timeline would be for a real response. The sound of sirens filled the air across town as that man fled, leaving the money scattered across the floor. I stood there in total stupor, shocked at what had just gone down in my shift. It's not a good day when you get a gun pointed at you while you're on the clock. Some people get benefits, and some people get the exact opposite. The police arrived within 6 minutes, but that man was long gone. They took my statement, and I spent the rest of the night replaying the events over and over in my head. My manager came in not long after the cops arrived and relieved me. He just let me decompress in the office for a bit. He said there hadn't been a robbery there in almost a year, and it was hopeful that the area had improved. He was very apologetic, but said it was also part of working overnights. That was my last night working at the gas station. That experience shook me, and I realized that no job was worth risking my life for. Grateful that I made it out of that situation unharmed, and I hope that sharing my story can serve as a reminder of the dangers that overnight workers face every single day. Back years ago, when I was like 12 or 13, me and a bunch of my buddies used to run wild in the parks throughout our community. We lived in the suburbs, so there really wasn't a whole lot to do. These were family hangout spots, places that we'd grown up playing frisbee and soccer. So naturally, they're places to congregate when we turned a certain age. I'd say we started hanging around in these parks in like fifth grade, but really made them the spot by the end of middle school. We'd hang out past curfew and into the night, seeing cops patrol the area, all that usual stuff. It was cool, fun, edgy, and a little dangerous. Things got way more fun the older we got, though, like playing hide and seek with the cops that would come through, messing with the overnight maintenance workers, stuff like that. The real danger, though, came from my freshman year of high school. We weren't the only kids patrolling the parks at night, and sometimes we'd run into the upperclassmen, or kids that we just plain didn't get along with. The seniors would just tease us, nothing major, as they usually had their own agenda going on. The kids that we didn't get along with, though, we'd go to war. We'd mess with each other back and forth, nonstop, until ultimately it started to get a little serious. First, it was just shouting matches, hurling insults at one another through the dark. Eventually, it progressed to strafing runs, where one group would try to sneak up on the other, blast them with water balloons, pine cones, whatever we came up with to throw. And yes, they would do the same to us. This turned into shoving, getting more physical, before finally we were outright threatening each other at school. You know the typical edgy middle school kids. "If I see you in the park tonight, you're dead." Those kind of things that we'd hear in the hallways. Forget the flagpole, forget the parking lot. Going to the park in the middle of the night was rapidly becoming something like a fight club situation. Nothing quite as structured and scary, but definitely rowdy and dramatic. It became something of a hobby to get as many buds together, so we had a big group, roaming around. The more numbers we had, the less likely it would be that someone would actually try and jump us. At the time, it seemed like serious gang warfare, but looking back, it was just a lot of hot air. It was a way for dumb suburban white kids to pass the time. By the end of my freshman year, I was a seasoned vet to the antics that we're getting up to. Some of them even called me security. But in all seriousness and realness, I wasn't a tough kid. I was just big for my age and grew up with my roughhousing uncles. I knew how to throw someone on their back or grab the pressure point along the ridge of their shoulder, little stuff that my uncles would use on me. If it actually came down to a real knockdown fight, I wasn't your guy. But I fronted with the best of them. The park was no longer a power vacuum. Only a couple of groups really ran the show. If they showed up, everyone else pretty much scattered. The group that I ran with were pretty serious delinquents, troublemakers. Most of us were metalheads and skater types. We weren't outfitted enough to be one of the power groups, which were largely composed of upperclassmen. Although I think I remember one group having members that weren't even students, like 19 or 20 year olds with nothing else to do. They went and drank beer at the park and just picked on high schoolers. Still, our groups had 10 or 12 people on a good day. We had skateboards and larger kids, so in the shadows, people usually didn't roll up on us, not until they knew who we were. Still, we showed up pretty much every night. It was the only thing to do. And there were actually two parks that we could drift between. If we got ran out of one, chances were pretty good we could hang out at the other. Also, being a bunch of punks, we loved getting into trouble, into danger. We loved fighting. It's not healthy, but whatever, we were just kids. Things got dicey a time or two. Usually when the insults went too far, suddenly a fight would break out and we usually find ourselves getting our asses kicked. We would quickly correct after that and make sure that we had as many kids with us as possible, not tangle with anyone we thought might get the better of us. We started targeting who we wanted to engage with. All of this long talk and background, so I can tell you about one night. We rolled out into the main drag, a park that was centered around a big reclaimed water lake in town. It was stinky, but it was the biggest park, so naturally, the one that everyone wanted to claim. We showed up early, like 6 p.m., and just hung out, skateboarded and whatever. By 8 or 9, the other crowds were starting to show up, mostly small groups, half outfitted with girls. They were the socialite kids that stuck to the parking lots, usually didn't even leave the vicinity of their cars. Once shit got real, they would just take off without even getting involved. We roamed the outskirts, this big grassy hill on the north side, that let us see who was coming and going. While we were up there kicking around and talking and surveying the park, we suddenly hear all this commotion behind us. Thinking a group of kids were about to cut up from the backside, where there was a little cluster of trees, we started to walk at an angle so we could flank them and catch them off guard. All of a sudden, we were lit up with flashlights, and it wasn't kids, it was a pair of police officers, sneaking up on the park from the far side to scare all the kids and start writing tickets. The park, I guess, technically closed at 9 p.m., and it was unlawful to be there any longer. Obviously, old folks walking their dogs didn't get in trouble, or joggers, but kids fighting definitely wasn't allowed. We just happened to be the first ones to get caught, and this was off for us, as we were usually pretty vigilant and really watching our backs. We got busted that night and everyone scattered. I'm talking in 10 different directions. The cops hustled after us for maybe 1 minute, but we knew they'd give up chase like they always did. And that's why they came out in teams with flashlights. It was mostly just scare tactics to keep us out. But if you were slow or unlucky enough and get cornered and caught, they'd stick you with the ticket, take you home to mom and dad, and generally just mess your week up. I was running the long way across the hill, hoping to dip around the far side and cut back towards the playground. This was a huge loop that would have me touring almost the entire park, which, in my head, was a perfect way to lose these clowns behind me. I figured they weren't chasing me, but in the event that they were, this would take me well out of their way of their eyes and flashlights. I looked back though, and I was wrong. One of the officers was jamming up across the hill after me, and from what it looked like, he was definitely going to catch me. I kept running and tried to take longer strides, but then turned on a dime and ripped down the slope, back towards the playground. I could no longer actually hear what happened behind me. The officer tried to run, slipped on the grass, and fully ate shit over the hillside. I ran for 10 more seconds before I looked back, just in time to see that cop getting to his feet again, straightening out his belt and radio. I kept going, and throughout the darkness of the park, I could see some of my buddies also disappearing into the night. The other cop was chasing a couple of them, but wasn't gaining any ground. It looked like we all avoided trouble, but became scattered to the wind. Some of us did have cell phones, and some of us didn't, so regrouping would be a bit of a hassle. All I could think about was the cop behind me, so I just continued to run. After blasting through the playground, I turned left and snaked my way the other direction. This took me between a pair of brick bathroom buildings. These were lit up on the outside, so I had to be careful. I slipped between them, took a peek around the other side, and then just kept huffing it towards the lake. My plan was to jog to the furthest side where there was another bathroom and an empty parking lot, and start looking for others from there. It was a long, dark, and sweaty jog, but I did finally make it. But I didn't see another soul the entire time. I kept my eyes peeled as I moved, but didn't see anyone. I didn't want another cop sneaking up on me either, because if he was fresh, he would definitely catch me in about 2 seconds. I was gassed, and I really needed to catch my breath. Once I made it into the parking lot, I picked the darkest corner and put my hands on my head. That old trick they teach you in gym class to help open up your airways. I walked in circles before spotting a drinking fountain over by the bathroom. I surveyed the area and saw that I was still alone. Hustled over to get a drink. That was what I really needed. And then I'd complete the rest of my lap around the lake, ultimately circling back to the hillside where we first scattered, and hopefully find all my friends. I could actually hear a short whistle coming from my right. And that was the way some of my buddies would find each other in the night. Just one small whistle, like a tracker. Well, I'm getting my drink and it's like God's own nectar. I actually zoned out for a second as I'm chugging away. That sweet, lukewarm park water in the middle of a breezy summer night, damn. Thinking about it actually takes me back, but it's only good for a second. As I'm getting my drink, though, I hear a step behind me. "Well, who do we have here?" they said. Shit, it's the cops, and I was not ready to run. I whirled around to see if I even had a chance, and to my horror, it's not the cops behind me, but a group of upperclassmen. 9 or 10 seniors come stepping out of the dark. They're in a half circle and there's nowhere to go. I remember the bathroom building behind me and decided to try the door, only to find it locked. I nestled in the brick corner of the building and tried to decide what to do. "What are you doing out here, dipshit? Don't you know curfew's at 9? One of them said, a kid that I actually recognized from school. "Yeah, man, you shouldn't be out here," another guy said. He was definitely older. I responded with a few choice words. The group just laughed at me and continued to close in. My hands literally started to shake. Even if all my friends appeared out of nowhere, we're still going to get our asses kicked. But I was one of the big ones in my group. I was even one of the big ones in my group, but these guys were towering over me. I balled my fists and got ready for the ass whooping of a lifetime. For whatever reason, with my back against the wall, I suddenly remembered a conversation that I had with my older sister when I was younger. She was a few years older than me and had long graduated by the time that I was a freshman, so she gave me a lot of advice. If you're getting into a fight and you think you're going to lose, start acting crazy. No one wants to fight a crazy person. Her words bounced around in my head. If you're going to lose, just act like a psycho. I looked around at all the guys surrounding me, looked at their dumb, smiling, laughing, totally oblivious faces. I was like a minnow to these guys, and they were a group of sharks. They didn't feel any danger. They didn't feel any danger whatsoever, and didn't feel like I could be a threat in any sense of the word. I realized the wisdom of my sister's words and then reached into my pocket. I used to carry a small pocket knife with me everywhere that I went. Just a small 2-inch blade, but it was razor sharp. Even when it was collapsed, and it served as a great fist compactor. I yanked it out of my pocket and flicked that little steel blade out underneath the flickering yellow light of the park bathroom. The whole group stopped for a second. The closest dude was probably still 3 or 4 feet away from me, but when he saw the knife, he stopped too and then started to laugh. "You guys ready to go?" I asked them at the top of my lungs. The closest guy took another step and I lunged at him with the blade. So quickly that he almost fell on his ass backwards, but collapsed into his buddies instead. I could see on his face that I legitimately scared the shit out of him. And in that moment, everyone's confidence blurred for a moment, except for mine. I took another step and put both hands on the next guy, shoved him backward as hard as I could. I even kicked one leg up on the brick wall behind me just to get some extra leverage. This kid went flying backwards a good 6 feet, slipped on the grass, and completely ate shit. I could see their morale breaking up right in front of me. I couldn't relent though. I knew if they got any kind of momentum together, they could just yank me from that corner and beat me down immediately. I was yelling at the top of my lungs, all kinds of crazy shit, threats, insults. I don't even remember everything that I said. A couple of them did trash talk back to me, but I would just cut them off and tell them to come get some. Come on, line it up. You think I'm gonna let you just beat the hell out of me? I'm gonna cut and stab every single one of you before that happens. Good luck explaining the puncture wounds tomorrow. I'll be here licking up the blood you leave behind, because that shit belongs to me now. Totally baseless, unhinged shit like that. I kept it up because I could see it was working. A couple of dudes literally mouthed to one another, "This kid is crazy," before bowing out in a half circle and then retreating away from all the commotion that I was making. And when that happened, it created pretty big gaps in the fence, so to speak. If just one or two more people walked away, or even turned their backs, I'd be able to run and possibly escape. I slashed outward with the knife, long, broad strokes that went left to right and then back again. I took a step forward and then did it once more, even lunged for the person closest. I got the exact reaction that I wanted, as a couple of them took a couple of steps back, and one actually turned and jogged away. The three or four that were left looked furious and probably weren't going to give up without the fight. So this was it. I fiend like I was going to start cutting at them again. Got those who were left to start sidestepping, and then I just bolted like my life depended on it. I was still exhausted from the losing the cops earlier, but a new dump of adrenaline had my knees almost tapping my chin. I turned to look back and thought I'd made some distance. Most of them remained in the parking lot, but two or three were coming up right behind me, chasing me off into the dark. I figured this was as good as my chances were going to get, and I just kept running. I was right. After a solid quarter mile behind me, I started to curve around the lake and come back around the other side. I saw one of the guys chasing me give up and go back to the parking lot. Now there were only two guys behind me, but they were definitely gaining. I was confident, though, that I'd be able to lose them on the far side. I did all manner of zigzagging, crisscrossing, trying to hide, all that kind of stuff. These guys were like bird dogs. They just wouldn't give up. Finally, I snaked back over to the playground from before, and then the coolest thing happened. All of my buddies had found each other and just happened to be near the playground, hiding out behind the bathrooms. They saw me hightailing it across the park, and then I just happened to dart through the area. I turned around and saw 8 or 9 of my buddies come out of nowhere and circle these two pricks exactly like they'd done to me on the far side of the lake. "Good evening. You guys chasing Brett over there?" they asked, pointing to me. "How old are you guys? Shouldn't you be at work, losers?" my friends pressed. The rest was history. I went and joined them after I caught my breath, shoving these guys back and forth, punching them in the ribs, slapping them in the face. They were easily 22 and 23 years old, pissed drunk, and had been chasing me through the woods like a psycho. Who knows what they would have done had I not pulled that knife. We ended up spending a few minutes tormenting them before the cops reappeared. A third one with them now, flashlights everywhere. "Hey, we got someone over here for you," we hollered at the officers. "These guys tried attacking us." Then we added some more lies, tried to kidnap us. Said stuff in pretty poor taste, I'll admit, but hey, we were kids. They were the ones that wanted to mess with us, but we got the last laugh. We ran off before the cops could get a hand on us, but left those two guys in a pretty poor state. By the end of high school, I was pretty much over the crazy nights of troublemaking, mostly because of that specific night. People caught some real charges, a couple of my friends included. What started as a literal fun and game became real street beef over nothing. Ended up affecting some lives. I still live in the same town. Still go to the same park, but never after dark. Sometimes when I drive by, I can see kids out there, running amok. And I wonder what kind of crazy stories they'll be telling their kids in 10 or 20 years. I'm a 22-year-old female, and I grew up in this small, reserved community in Lake George, New York. I live with three siblings and my parents. Me being from New York State, I never really visited the city much. I went maybe twice as a kid, but I never really remembered much of my visits. When I graduated high school, me and my best friend, whom I'm now living with, thought it would be fun to take a small road trip down to New York City. It was just the two of us. We stayed for a weekend and had this really amazing time. It seemed more magical going to the city this time around than it did many years ago. I absolutely fell in love with the city life and wanted more than anything just to live there. I work real estate. It's not something I want to do or even thought I would do for a career, but me being 18 and money hungry, I thought I should just go for it and take that 77-hour class. I ended up getting my real estate license at 19, and I make pretty good money off doing it. After saving up, I decided to move to New York City, and it was the best decision that I could possibly have ever made. I was pursuing my real estate career down there and was renting out and selling properties like crazy. I lived alone, while my family and best friend were still upstate. It didn't really take long, though, before I adapted to living alone. I've always been super independent anyway. One day, I get home around 6 p.m. and was thinking about making myself some dinner, because I went grocery shopping the night before. When I get all my groceries out to cook, I noticed there was a few things missing. I didn't think much of it as I blame myself for probably forgetting something or using it already without even realizing it. I shrug it off and make dinner with the things that I had, as in I didn't really feel like going back to the store on that night. While I was winding down for bed later, I heard noises coming from inside my walls. I'm not sure what prompted me to think this, but I just thought that maybe it was mice or maybe rats. I'm not a very skeptical person, so I kind of forgot about it and said I'd take care of it the next day. Over the next few days, though, things began getting weirder. Plastic water bottles from the case would randomly disappear. I noticed that my hygiene products were getting low very quickly. Food was still going missing. I started to get worried after this. I wanted to set up some cameras in my apartment to maybe catch what the problem was, but part of me didn't really want to know the answer to that. I couldn't sleep the next couple of nights. I kept hearing those god-awful scratching noises coming from inside my walls, and banging started occurring on the floor. I even swore up and down that I woke up to doors opening and closing one night. The sounds occurred at nighttime, not so much in the morning. Me being gone working during the day, I had no idea what could have gone on. But however, on this particular morning, it was early, maybe 5 a.m. It was still dark outside, and I heard noises again. I grabbed my phone and put 911 in the keypad, just in case, but didn't dial it yet. I started looking in all the rooms of my apartment. While looking, I heard this huge bang, and then didn't hesitate to call the police. Not long after that they arrived, I told them what had been happening, and they began searching for themselves. One of the officers called to the other side of the guest room. There was what looked like to be a crawl space in the back of the closet. One of the officers moved the board that was covering the entrance to the space and shone his flashlight inside. To my absolute shock and horror, the officer pulled out this scrawny, middle-aged white man out of that room. He looked absolutely cracked out. I had no idea how he could have even gotten there. The officer who found him put him in cuffs while the other officer searched the room. He found drug paraphernalia, food wrappers, and weapons, such as a semi-automatic pistol and several other pocket knives, as well as some knives from my kitchen, not to mention a ton of my personal belongings. The officer said from their observation, it looked like the man had been living in that space for almost a week. If I didn't call the police that morning, I might have wound up dead. From that day on, I moved and promised myself I would never live alone again. Well, at least with an unwanted guest.